What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. It has been a rough week, continues to be a rough week for the NBA with regard to COVID, and appears to only be getting worse. As I record this late Thursday afternoon, there have just been reports that Russell Westbrook and Avery Bradley of the Lakers have gone into health and safety protocols. Isaac Okoro of the Cavaliers, same thing. There were reports a few hours ago of an outbreak with the Sacramento Kings, details on that still emerging. We saw the Bulls have two games postponed this week for lack of available players. Those are the first two games postponed this season for COVID reasons. Giannis is in health and safety protocols. Rick Carlisle, the Pacers coach, is in protocols. By the latest accounting, 63 players in the NBA have been in protocols at some point this season, and that includes 47 just in the first couple weeks of December. Now, remember, guys being in health and safety protocols does not necessarily mean they're ill or very ill, or even symptomatic. They could just be in protocols as a result of close contact. To the NBA's credit, they're simply erring on the side of caution. And so anybody who tests positive, whether symptomatic or not, or whether they've been in close contact, guys go into protocols, and some come out faster than others, depending on whether they do become symptomatic. But it's a reminder that we are not nearly out of the woods as a society, as a country, and the NBA is merely a reflection of the infections that are going on from city to city. We're at 800,000 deaths. We've recently crossed that marker in the U.S. We're still averaging about 1,000 a day. So the virus is still very much with us, which means that the NBA is still very much having to deal with it on a day-to-day basis and figure out how to navigate this. So what's it all mean for the league? What about the Omicron variant and what that may do to the season? Are things about to get worse? What should the league be doing at a moment like this? Those are all questions on all of our minds, of course. So I wanted to bring in my friend, Dr. Robbie Sicca, who joins me on today's podcast. We did record this morning, Thursday morning. So this is before a lot of this news about others going into protocols came out. So just keep that in mind when we cite some of the numbers and incidents. Some of this happened later. Robbie Sicca is the former VP of Basketball Ops and Player Wellness for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's also founder and chair of the COVID Sports and Society Work Group. The short version of this is Robbie has spent a lot of time working on these COVID issues in the NBA and between leagues as well. He's really smart on all this stuff. He is somebody whose voice has been very influential in the NBA's policymaking over the last couple of years. And he just has a lot of great information, which we will get to in a minute. Before we get to that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Dr. Robbie Sicca is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by Dr. Robbie Sicca. Robbie, good morning. Thank you for joining me. How are you, sir?
Doing okay. Good morning to you, and happy holidays, Howard.
You as well. Before we jump in, I have a separate intro where I gave people a little bit of sense of your COVID grounding and your work with the Timberwolves and the NBA. But just to start off real quick, give people a sense of because, you know, you're not an epidemiologist necessarily by training or infectious disease, but you have worked a lot in this space. So give people a sense first of where your kind of your COVID training is.
Well, I think the beginning of the pandemic was where I kind of sowed my royal oats in terms of managing patients, because I'm an anesthesiologist and a practicing physician who's seen patients who've gone through this. And so when you start to get into the weeds and actually see how patients were managed and how testing was a real challenge, I realized that the best thing I can do is bring together really smart people. So while I'm a practicing doctor, I tried to bring together the smartest people from different walks of life, whether it's epidemiologists, ID doctors, real lab scientists, and put together what is now known as the COVID Sports and Society Work Group, which is all the leagues, all the different organizations that really contribute to public health in this country. So state departments of public health, labs, private companies, how they're testing and, you know, how they're actually implementing this is really, really important. But, you know, really it's been a collection where I'm bringing together groups and I'm trying to learn and then use some of the platforms that I have and some of the lessons that I've learned and reflect that back, because what we're seeing in sports should be given back to society. If we want to be able to go to games, we want to be able to share it. And that's been my vantage point, is seeing how sports and entertainment has looked at COVID and now how we can bring it forward to broader society.
And I mentioned this in the introduction so people know, but yeah, you worked obviously very intimately with the NBA on its strategizing with regard to COVID. And obviously you were serving with the Timberwolves during the pandemic and working with them on their approach. So you are as well versed in this, especially from the sports side of it and managing it within a sports team as anyone. So a quick review as we dive in here. According to Baxter Holmes's most recent accounting for ESPN.com, as of Wednesday morning, 60 players, NBA players had entered health and safety protocols at some point this season, 43 in the last 2 weeks. Of course, the disclaimer that I always give, it does not necessarily mean all had symptoms or even severe symptoms, but still, that is a lot. We've saw two games postponed this week. We've seen just every day, it seems like a new report. General question, what is happening in the NBA right now? Why is it being hit so hard at this moment, do you think? How should we interpret this kind of this cascade of infections across the league, especially when we keep hearing, well, the NBA was 97% vaccinated amongst its players and required vaccinations among everybody else in support staff. So how is this happening? How should we interpret this?
Well, I think to just clarify one thing that you said too, just because you entered the protocols didn't mean that you tested positive. It did mean that you had a potential exposure, even though we're 97% vaccinated. Sure. Those are some of the unique subtleties of the program that the NBA runs. And I think the biggest take-home message for listeners and for people out there is the reason the NBA can really stay open right now is because everybody is vaccinated by and large. And we are seeing a reduction in severe illness. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, we think that Omicron is not going to cause more severe illness. I think that that's something that we're going to learn as we go forward. But it is really important to take stock. And the reason sports can continue is because we are broadly vaccinated, meaningfully more than the larger population, which is 60% of eligible adults and kids right now. The other key piece here is that because sports leagues and entertainment and other organizations are doing asymptomatic testing, they're testing everybody frequently. So they're picking up cases sooner and trying to reduce spread. And the most important thing that I give a ton of credit to the leagues, they've never collaborated on anything like this before, Howard, which is they are putting the public health interest ahead of anything else. They recognize that their players are high exposure. They can't really run if, you know, their players are continuing to get COVID, but their players are potentially seeds to spread infection. And they don't want their players to be doing that in the broader community. And I think that that's a really important take-home message, that the leagues are doing the right thing. And the reason they're doing that is hospitals are still full. The thing that we as a society and in a country and in a sports league that's so analytics driven, at the beginning, we used case rates to track how bad COVID was getting. Now, until we start to separate out case rates by vaccinated, boosted and vaccinated, unvaccinated, we're not looking at analytics the right way. We're not looking at the right metrics. The metric right now is hospitalization rates that we really need to follow. That's the one that we need to understand. How severe is Omicron? How bad is it going to get? Hospitals are already full with Delta patients. It's probably going to get worse with Omicron patients. Not enough people are getting boosted. That's the for the analytic minds out there, that's the number we need to be following. And if you're a basketball fan, you probably are familiar with, like, this is, you know, the next generation of advanced analytics.
So important point here, and thank you for the clarification too, about, like, if you go into health and safety protocols, you may not even have tested positive. It may have just been an exposure. And that's why some guys come back quicker than others from the health and safety protocols, of course. But this is an interesting way of interpreting this, and I want you to just kind of verify this kind of the way people should look at it. When we see 60 players have entered health and safety protocols, 43 in the last 2 weeks, this is not a reflection of an NBA failure so much as this is a reflection of, one, obviously community spread, but two, that the NBA is actually erring on the side of hyper-caution here by taking these guys out of circulation, essentially, right? Like, this is, it's not a sign so much of a breakdown as it is that they are taking a harder line than probably most other sectors in our society.
Absolutely. They're testing more. They're testing the way we should be testing in broader society. They're a reflection of what we should be doing in corporate America, where we're testing people. But, you know, the NBA does have resources that some other industries don't have. They have a population that's following rules. And I give a ton of credit to the players and the coaches who continue to wear masks when there's more players and staff wearing masks in broader society. So they're doing it right. And I think that's part of the reason you're seeing less severe illness. But this is a different pandemic, Howard, than it was at the beginning. This is a much more contagious variant. Delta was a much more contagious variant. And you brought up one point about how, you know, you don't have to be testing positive to get back sooner. One of the other key points is here, if you are vaccinated, you likely are returning to sport sooner. You probably are clearing the virus. And that came out from an NBA study that recently was published looking at the Delta variant and other variants. If you're vaccinated, you do come back and you are able to enter sports sooner than if you are unvaccinated. And I think that that's a take-home message for people who aren't vaccinated and who aren't boosted. You will come back to work. You will be able to get back to your day-to-day sooner if you are vaccinated.
All important points to note, but let me go back to now just the broader impression that this leaves. What should the level of concern do you think be, whether it's just from a fan perspective of, my team has been hit hard, or I'm worried that my team's the next one to get hit hard and guys are going to miss games or whatever. What's the level of concern do you think from an NBA standpoint about where the numbers are right now, about Omicron in general, as a still emerging threat? Where is the level of concern?
I mean, I'm very concerned right now because I think we're still in the throes of a significant Delta pandemic that will likely very quickly switch here to Omicron. And then we're going to be in another stage of this. We have the tools to be able to reduce the transmission here. We really do. And those are masking, testing and vaccination and distancing. It's very hard to conduct a league and it's very hard to attend a game with those things in place. But, you know, that's part of the trade-off. And what you're seeing is fans who want to go the extra mile and be safe are testing and they're doing the right things. And from a broader perspective, I'm really nervous about the next 3 weeks. It's the holidays. Everybody wants to see their family. Are the right tests in the right places so that you can go see your grandparents, you can go see aunt and uncle, and know that you are negative? You got to be sure, because if you're going to go see your at-risk grandparents or you're going to go see your at-risk aunt and uncle, are you sure that you're negative? And do we have the right sense of those tests? Are people educated? And look, this is the world's biggest science experiment, unfortunately, Howard, right? We're learning in real time. That's unsettling for people. And I think that the information train has been really, really hard to deal with, because every day something emerges, every day something evolves. Omicron came up on Thanksgiving Day, right? Like, we all thought, hey, this is getting a little bit better. But I think we in sports knew from the surge in cases, not just in the NBA, but in other leagues, that we've had more cases for the last month, that this was going to be a tough holiday season because we're not masking, we're not testing, we're not boosting enough people, and that we lag behind Europe by a couple weeks. We usually use sports. I mean, the first big case to predict the surge in March 2020 was Rudy Gobert, right? Like, sports then predicted the surge later in the year when we had more cases in the NBA and the NFL towards the end of the year. And now we're seeing the same thing again, that sports is predicting it.
There's another side issue here that I want to just hit real quick as we get into this, because the frustration, as I discuss this with people, and, you know, and I do interviews where people are bringing me on radio and asking me about what's the NBA going to do and how should they handle this. And of course I'm much less skilled trained in this than you are. But I have my impressions about how the NBA has handled this and what it can and can't do. One of the things that's frustrating for me as a person whose whole job is about information, I'm a reporter, is we don't really know what's going on when the NBA tells us these things. A guy goes into health and safety protocols can mean probably four or five different things at least. I understand there's HIPAA, there, you know, which is, you know, privacy laws with regard to your medical status. But wouldn't it be helpful for us as fans and as the public to know when the NBA says X number of people, coaches, players, whoever, gone into health and safety protocols without identifying by name, couldn't they be at least classifying how many guys were symptomatic, asymptomatic, pre-symptomatic, I suppose, mild symptoms versus more severe symptoms? Wouldn't we be helped on some level as the public? And yes, of course, as you're smiling, I'm saying this as a reporter who gets annoyed by the tight grip on the information here, partially because it's my instincts as a reporter, but partially because I think it would be helpful to know, instead of getting this overall impression of, oh my God, the NBA's got an outbreak, it may not be as serious as it sounds sometimes.
To answer your question, I think, look, I would love to have more transparency. And I think one of the key things here, Howard, is it's really, really hard because things are fluid, and it's very, very difficult in real time to share all of that clinical data. That's tough because that's not the nature of right now. We've got to confirm that, you know, just like you want to be sure that you're negative or positive, when we test somebody, we got to be sure that the results are right. That's not easy to do. Like, this is a lab-based test. It's really, really hard. And, you know, you think back to, I mean, let's go back to even 1991 when Magic Johnson tested positive for HIV. They had to be sure that he was positive, right, before they came out with that news. No different than right now. Like, hey, we got to be sure that somebody's positive or negative before we move forward. And there's a game being played. And if we're not sure that they're positive or negative, how do we handle that type of situation? So now fast forward, obviously, to 2020, 2021, we're collecting this information, we're collecting real-time data, and we want to be able to potentially look at, you know, can this athlete play? Well, do we know when they're contagious? Do we not know when they're contagious? You know, we've got to look at data that, you know, as scientists and as doctors, we're just learning about. Like, this is not the job of what some of these people are being asked to do. So it's difficult. And I really empathize with people who have to take data where some of the smartest people that I've worked with in sports are being asked to be, you know, epidemiologists. They're not trained to do that. I'm not trained. Like, you know, we've got real day jobs. So being able to apply this information, it speaks to how people have worked together to understand information quickly and get the league to function. And so I think certain things get put by, you know, by the curb, like, hey, transparency and sharing some of this information, just because we got to get through the game today. And we'll get you the information when we can, but we need to look at it. We need to make sure that it's really right. But the first thing is, we don't want to do any harm. And I respect that. I think that that's the right approach, that as opposed to making something public that you're not totally sure of, let's pause. The other thing, and I brought this up to Andy Slavitt in March of 2020, it was a month into the pandemic. And I said, this really reminds me of HIV. It's the only virus that I've seen that points a finger at who gave it to me. Mm-hmm. If you went to a party two or three years ago and you got sick, even if somebody was sick there, you really never knew who gave you that virus, right? Like, you don't know where you got it. You could have gotten it from anywhere. This is something that points a finger. And the social construct of COVID is a real interesting conundrum, because if you're a point guard and you're going into a situation and some other player or teammate or some opponent exposes you to COVID, and now you test positive and you can't play in a game, that's a real different dilemma. And I think that's where the order of operations, particularly right now, like, there's a really interesting study that looked at, if you test positive for COVID and you have the same amount of virus as somebody who's in the ICU with COVID, is there more COVID at your house or in the ICU from breathing? In the ventilation system in the hospital, the vents are on the ceiling, so they're pushing air down, versus the ventilation system at your home, they're pushing air up. There's more COVID on the outside of your mask in your house than there is in the hospital, meaning that your house is less safe than going to a hospital where everybody's masked. Wow. That's really concerning, because right now people are getting COVID at home. They're not necessarily getting it, you know, just out and about. They're getting it at restaurants. That's for sure. Restaurants are definitely not a safe place right now. Again, But then it's tough, like you said at the beginning, it's tough to go back to 2020 and say, don't go do the things you want. Hey, I just got vaccinated. I want to be able to go to a show. I want to be able to go to a game. But if there's just, there's more virus now than there was even at the peak of the pandemic, potentially.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up just on a personal level and for the listeners, you know, as you're deciding how to conduct your own day-to-day, folks. I mean, so Robbie and I talked about this offline briefly before we started, you know, before we hit the record button, that for me, psychologically, you know, because we're this far into it, and I think this is how everybody feels, I got vaccinated as soon as I could. I got my second shot back in the spring. I got my booster a couple weeks ago. I want to do what I can to live my life as normally as possible. I'm masking when I go inside places, and here in New York, that is still more, you know, more the norm than not. But I've been to concerts, and at concerts, my mask has been off, but they're checking our passes on the way in, our Excelsior passes, which indicate for New York State that you are fully vaccinated. And so I'm feeling like, well, if I'm in a building of like 5,000 people at a concert and everybody has had to show their vaccination status on the way in, we're all vaccinated, should be fine. And I know that there is no 100%. I understand that. But it is, trying to toe that line between being very vigilant and doing the responsible thing, but at the same time, trying to get back to normalcy. Like, I don't know that balance even for myself, much less how the NBA or anybody else should be conducting it. And as you said, Robbie, restaurants are probably the worst possible place. We have very, very rarely eaten indoors, even after getting vaccinated. A quick aside here for folks as you mentioned, going into holidays and everything else, how they should they be governing themselves?
Yeah, you know, look, everybody has to look at their own risk profile, Howard. And look, going to a concert a month ago or 2 months ago was a little bit of a different proposition than now. And I think that's where, like, you know, you kind of got to take a, you know, sort of, hey, what is my community like? What are my close contacts like? And I think that's where everybody's got to look at their own individual risk profile. I've flown, I've traveled, I haven't eaten at a restaurant in almost 2 years. Again, like, I know what my risk profile is, but I have a 3.5-year-old that I love, and I have a newborn who I love, and I have a wife who, you know, I love, and I have to protect the lowest common denominator in my home, which is my newborn and my, you know, recently pregnant wife. So when I have to protect them, I'm going to take certain risks that, you know, are within my profile and within what I deem comfortable. And I think right now, an important note here is that this idea of cloth masks and some of the other things that we were able to do last year and get away with it, we're probably not able to get away with now. This is a more contagious variant. There's more cases. Everybody's asymmetric. And when people were boosted, when people were vaccinated, we just have more cases right now. So right now is not the time to take those unnecessary risks. And for our players, again, like, I give them a lot of credit. They're trying to protect themselves. They're wearing masks. They're following the protocols. You don't hear about guys not following protocols in the NBA. The players are doing their best, and the league has adapted and adjusted really, really well to changing demands. But what you are seeing is that there's just too much virus in the community. We knew that schools were going to be a problem. We had a post-Halloween surge last year. But where do you draw the line if you're a player and you're like, man, I just want to go out to one dinner. I just want to go do that one thing. You got to protect yourself. And if you want to go to dinner, private room.
So what do we suspect is, I mean, I don't want to be irresponsible in this, Robbie, but you know the NBA, I know the NBA. We've both been in these, you know, circles for a while. When a team has an outbreak, and especially since there is 97% vaccination rate, and so they're at least more protected in general, if a bunch of, you know, the bunch of the Lakers recently, a bunch of the Bulls, Hornets, Nets, is it probably because guys are just letting down their guard and going to dinner? Is it as simple as probably that? And then, or, you know, especially together, I mean, do we have any sense of like where this is infiltrating the league, or is it, or maybe it's just proportional to the community around them? Maybe it's just a reflection.
I think that's what it is, Howard. I think that it's proportional to the community around them, because I think guys have really followed protocols really well. Players take things seriously. They're masking. They understand. And when you have a population that's 97% vaccinated, they're taking this seriously. Like, they're not wasting their time and just like, whatever, these guys are making us do stuff. Like, I think the players and the league is generally taking this very seriously, which again is great, but you got a ton of cases. And we've never gotten to the point where this has really been quelled. I think when we look back and say, should we have really shut down everything at the beginning? Was that the right approach? We may think twice about, you know, should we have shut down everything, or could we have done sporadic or spot shutdowns and really tested? But again, sports is the only group that, and entertainment is really the only two groups that are testing every day and testing asymptomatic individuals. So they're going to pick up stuff more than others.
I keep getting asked the question about, is the NBA going to pause the season? Should the NBA pause the season? What would be the value to, I mean, we don't have to address the economics of it. We know it would be, you know, pretty rough for the NBA to just stop playing. And we don't know, you know, if you're going to pause, well, okay, when do you decide to unpause? Like, that, how do you decide when it's okay? What do you think of that that general question? Because it keeps, people keep throwing that at me.
Look, I think that it's too early to think about things like that. We know that the next few weeks are going to be bad. You've got a vaccinated population. I think a better question is, you know, at what point last year, if you look, like, should we have cut down on our masking? And, you know, probably in retrospect, we should not as a nation have trimmed back on masking in May. We should have said, like, hey, you need to mask all the way through, like, you know, hey, until we really have nipped this in the bud, we need to mask everybody. As opposed to pausing the league, I think there's a lot of other things that can come in between that can really mitigate community spread. And those are increased masking. Those are requiring testing in certain scenarios for fans. Those are other scenarios like what we saw with Toronto. But those have economic implications too. And I think we really need to look at what are the other strategies. And it's a key initiative that I'm leading with a lot of the folks from our sports and society work group, is educating employers about taking some of the burden and testing their employees as we get into January, as we get into the next year. We want other people to emulate what sports is doing and start to do the same things. Because the more tests we get into the community, the earlier we're going to pick up cases, the more we're going to reduce transmission, the more awareness people are going to have, and it's getting boosters into arms. And so I think there's other things that we can do prior to shutting down, like the leagues have already done. I mean, every single NBA team, NFL team hosted vaccination events. We should probably be hosting booster events right now, right? We should be pushing things like that. Those are going to be the things that get you over the top. Even if the booster isn't perfect, I think we really need to recognize the booster was not designed to prevent everything when you have this many cases. The booster was designed to, like, work when, you know, we have a low level of virus in the community. Hey, you need this little boost to, you know, avoid getting hospitalized. But the cat's out of the bag now.
I've got two thoughts on how the league approaches this from here. One that is more about operations. One that's just more about, you know, player population. So let's start there. We heard a lot in the when they resumed in 2020 or the 2020-21 season, there was a lot about what players could and could not do on a day-to-day basis. There was all the testing multiple times a day, including early in the morning. That was an incredible burden on them, but they did it. They had all these restrictions. If you're on the road, you can be at the hotel, you can be with your teammates in a team capacity and at the arena, but that's it. You're not going out. You're not. There were all these restrictions on their day-to-day. Those protocols are no longer really in place. So should the NBA be going back to more of a, it's obviously not lockdown, but almost a virtual lockdown, that its players, even at 97% of them vaccinated, should they be taking more of the 2020-21 type precautions to stem this tide?
I think they are. I think they are layering and testing. I think they, you know, the leagues were telling people to mask their players and staff to mask and get boosted, you know, weeks ago. So I think they've been actually doing a lot of the last year stuff already. I think right now what we're seeing is, hey, there's going to have to be a little bit more of a reaction to this new variant that we're learning about daily. That's the part that, look, we were doing this even before Omicron had emerged. And that was really only 2 weeks ago. Like, that was something that I don't know that anybody underplayed it. I think we had a lot to learn very quickly about how it was spreading. And we've been all hands on deck. Everybody's trying to figure out, like, what is up, what is down. We're seeing it from South Africa. We're getting it from Europe. But it's, again, real time. And how can we apply some of these principles in real time? And that's, okay, let's test a little bit more. Let's test like last year. Like you said at the beginning, though, Howard, people are tired. People are fatigued. Those are real concerns right now with I think, how people are handling this stage of the pandemic. And this is not the time to be fatigued. It's the holidays. If you want to see family, you really got to go that extra mile and protect yourself. I think a key piece here is understanding what the next 2 weeks are like. I think that it's going to be really bad. We're going to see a lot of cases in the next 2 weeks with the holidays. We don't know what the following month is going to look like. It's probably going to be bad because Omicron will be the dominant variant. But we really don't know how boosters are going to impact transmission. It doesn't look like they are going to completely eliminate your odds of getting it. I do think that, especially in an NBA population where almost, more than half the league has gotten a booster, I think that that's a really, really important flag, that that's going to really reduce the odds of severe illness. That's really, really good news.
So the other piece of this, there's what the NBA can control in its own population, players and coaches and staff members and arena personnel and all that. But then there's the arenas themselves and the fans. And the NBA has been all over the map with this, and they certainly are right now. Every city is different. Every arena is different. I've been to a few different ones, and I can tell you, like, we are, and I'm not complaining about this, I'm just going to point out the inconsistency here. We as media, to be in Tier 1, have to have been fully vaccinated, which we show to the NBA in order to get a press pass in the first place to games this season. And I have to be masked the whole time. Whether I'm down at court level near players or whether I'm up in the stands sitting in our media seating, I am masked, as are my media colleagues the whole time. However, there are fans, as you can see every night on League Pass, sitting courtside within a few feet of players who might have a mask on, they might have their mask off, they might just have it on their chin, all the usual stuff. I do think that this is a stark inconsistency, and I do wonder, especially now, Robbie, as you are sounding the alarm and others are sounding the alarm about Omicron and about what's to come in the next few weeks, should the NBA be mandating that all of its arenas, at a minimum, I don't know if we should be testing fans on the way in and having that be a requirement, or if we should be going back to or actually imposing vaccination requirements on fans coming into arenas league-wide. What should we be doing on that aspect of it? Because if part of this whole exercise is the league not just protecting its own, but also being responsible, being a leader, setting the right example and sending the right messaging, why be so restrictive with your own players and staff, but then let 20,000 people in a building unmasked and with no idea whether they're vaccinated or not, or possibly carrying the virus?
I think you bring up some points that, look, we live in a country with 50 different states, 50 different populations. I think we're starting to talk a little bit about, what we're seeing in Florida and Texas, from the late summer versus what we're seeing now in the Midwest. And I think that a lot of this is a reflection of the broader, 400 million population having some different views and having different political views across the country. And I think those are really, really challenging elements here for the league to navigate through, because you have 28 different arenas across the country, 29 different arenas. That's, they're in a lot of different locations. And I think that the governance there is hard when you can't even agree right now on, nationally, how we can have national federal standards for testing. And, should the federal government be sending every family KN95s? I think those would be the things that I'd like to see the government really step up and support the leagues, which have done a really good job of helping broader society, and we need to continue to collaborate. And I know there's already been really good collaborations here that have helped, but we're at the point now where, it's noticeable, the asymmetries. And it's why I really applaud sports, because again, you see more masks on the players and on the media. And I've said, when I was with the Wolves, I said, we probably need to have a mask optional culture for the rest of the foreseeable future for our lives. If someone's wearing a mask, they're protecting themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that that's a good thing, going forward, that people are going to take ownership of their own health data and their own health. Andrew Witty, the CEO of United Health Group, recently said that we have the most educated population on health at any time point in mankind's history. More people know about their own health than ever before. This is the opportunity to make sure that we're getting the right information to people. People want to learn, but if they're getting the wrong information, then we're going to have a problem, and we can't have the experts be drowned out. That's part of the reason I wanted to do the podcast with you is like, I think this is a good opportunity because you're very educated on this topic. You ask really good questions and you're a representative of the broader population, which is confused about boosters, which is confused about masking, which is confused about testing. And I want people to feel like they can ask those questions. So I think you're asking the everyman question, which is really important.
So a quick follow-up, and I understand like there are, there's political differences and political sensitivities and that vary city to city, but as of just a matter of public health, would you prefer to see that NBA arenas require everybody to be masked on the way in and maybe even providing proof of a negative test and or vaccination?
I'd love that. I think that would be great. I also think that I'd love to see that at schools. I recognize that at schools, there's probably an implication on a mental health level for students to be masked and an education level too. So it's challenging. And the enforcement is really, really hard. But yes, those are the kinds of things that we collectively as a country need to come together on, because it will get us over the top here with the rest of this pandemic.
I believe it's this weekend. So we're recording this on a Thursday. I believe it's this weekend that Toronto is going to reduce capacity. I think maybe is it 50% at Scotiabank Arena where the Raptors play. What do you think of that as an approach from a public health standpoint and a sports standpoint? Again, I'm not saying that, the NBA can try to do the same with all its other, that it's a city by city thing and everything else, but, yeah. And then there's an economic impact, I understand too, but what do you think of that as a measure and whether that is an example that maybe others will follow, should follow, where does that go?
Look, I'm sure that that can help reduce community spread. I'm sure that that method can work. Is it enough? Is it the right first step? I think time will tell on those kinds of things, because I would say, again, like you can get to 50%, but if you're completely unmasked, like what's the right intervention, right? Like is requiring masks and dropping the population the right first step? Is it requiring a test within 24 hours and cutting the population the right approach? I think you could also ask, if you're the Toronto Raptors, is there a competitive disadvantage now because you've got a 50% crowd? So I think those are all really key things that need to be thought about and considered. And again, I think they do a wonderful job in Toronto. The entire organization is really, really thoughtful about not just COVID, but all things health and wellness. You and I have talked a lot about the Toronto folks in general, like they're leaders in health and player health. So I'm not surprised that they were one of the first to jump to this.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting too, Robbie, when I think about, the way you have kind of, and others in public health have sounded these warnings about what's coming in these next few weeks. And it reminds me, of course, of where we were this last January, which was the darkest days of the pandemic and also the most tumultuous for the NBA when we saw all those postponements and the Wizards were knocked out for two straight weeks and all this. And I wonder if the things that you and I are discussing right now about the measures that teams are or are not taking, that arenas are or are not taking, might be a very different discussion 2-3 weeks from now, a month from now, because their hand might be forced, right? Like if community spread gets that much worse across, the country in NBA cities, those cities are going to have to respond.
Yeah, it's going to, Howard. I mean, it's going to be worse because the cat's out of the bag and we're only picking up the cases that we're testing right now. There's going to be more cases and it's going to be a really, really tough next few weeks. Again, it doesn't mean we can't get better, but people need to do the right things for us to get over the top. And we said this last year, if we really want to enjoy the season, we need to get a large number of people vaccinated. Well, we got our players vaccinated. That's part of the reason we're able to play basketball, because if we weren't vaccinated, we'd probably have even more outbreaks. This would be meaningfully worse and we would have guys who are out longer. So my hope is that we can continue on and that we're going to be able to enjoy the season at a high level. My fear is that this stopping and starting, guys coming in and out, leads to injuries, leads to less quality basketball, leads to a surge in other unpredictable things. And I think in general, my worst fears have come true most of the time with this pandemic. And I think that it's impacted the quality of play. It's impacted the enjoyment for fans as well. And I want us to be able to enjoy what will hopefully be a more normal playoff year next year? Because even last year, when we were vaccinating and we were getting better, we were still impacted by COVID cases. For us to get over the hump as a country, as a world, we've got to get boosters, we've got a mask, we've got a test, we've got to work together now so that we really can have a meaningfully better next summer, which I still think is on the table. I still think it's very possible that next summer we are in a much better place if we do the right things now.
I very much hope so, my friend. A couple more quick before I let you go. On a basketball level here, this which feels trivial sometimes in the context of these broader conversations, but it all intersects. You know, Kyrie Irving hasn't played a game for the Nets this season because he has refused the vaccination, and New York has laws in the books that will not allow him to play home games. And so the Nets decided, well, then we're just not playing him at all because, obviously it poses too many challenges. So Kyrie is an outlier in this, but that's because of the market he plays in. So New York and San Francisco have these laws on the books. For what you're monitoring from your, vantage point, do you think, and especially given what's to come on with Omicron and everything, what might we see more mandates like those in cities across the country, especially in NBA cities? Because while there aren't that many players that are unvaccinated, there are still, 20, 30, maybe. And I'm curious if, what if those mandates start applying to the visiting players too? Right now, right, it only affects the player who's in the market. But unvaccinated players coming in from other cities are out allowed to play. It's all very strange. But anyway, might we see a stricter mandate that applies to home and road? Might we just see more cities adopting the approach that New York and San Francisco did? Because that would have implications for players.
I think that, again, we're going to start to, as a country, really track hospitalizations. And the longer hospitalizations are going up and that hospitals are full across the country, the more likely you will see a more restrictive style. We have the tools. And until we can start to reduce that number, this will continue to be the same pandemic. Nothing's going to change until hospitalizations drop and we are able to reduce severe illness. And I think it goes back to, we've seen really good data from this Pfizer drug and some of the Merck data for antivirals. If we want to use those, we actually have to test people. So until we can test people, pick off cases, reduce community spread, we're going to be dealing with the same thing. And those will lead to more restrictions. And I think that that's a really important thing for broader society to prepare for. There's two things that we've got to do: test, reduce hospitalizations. If we do that, we're going to be okay.
Last thing from an NBA standpoint, and I know that, the NBA's approach and society's approach kind of have to track together. But from an NBA standpoint, sports standpoint, when can we say that the pandemic is quote unquote over and have normalcy for NBA teams, NBA fans? Like, is that even a question that's answerable right now? I'm not sure, but it is a curiosity. Like, when do we get back to everybody could just go about their business the way that they did in, I shouldn't even say January, February of 2020, because we probably were making mistakes then. But for all intents and purposes, that was the before time still. When do we get back to that? When can the NBA get back to that?
Well, look, I think one of my last memories of normal society, even though I was thinking about COVID a lot, was at the Chicago All-Star Weekend, right? Yeah. Like, what is All-Star Weekend going to be like this year? And I think All-Star Weekend is going to be heavily limited by COVID. Testing, vaccination, all those things are still going to be topics of concern. We're not going to be through this by February. To go back to my previous point, hospitalizations are the thing that we're going to track. And when people are not dying each day, when we're not losing 2,000 people a day, we will start to be in a different stage of this pandemic and we can consider it endemic and we can move forward. There's still long COVID. There's still a lot of other impacts of this virus, but we'll vaccinate and we'll booster and we'll come up with treatments. I think the point right now is that we are a ways away from that. We've got to do the right things. And unfortunately, repeatedly, we have not done the right things to quell hospitalizations, to get that number down. We've done it in sports and in large part, but broader society has to work together and take some of these lessons and apply them. And I'm optimistic about next summer. I'm going to continue to project out 6-7 months every time I can and say, if we do these things, here are the real requirements. Here's what we need to do. If we do that, we can get over the hump and we can make this meaningfully better.
Anywhere where you could recommend listeners go just for their daily kind of, get up to date on where things are, how they should be conducting themselves, what the best guidance is, any particular resource that you think is the most helpful for the layperson?
Yeah, you know, I use the New York Times COVID tracker. I think that it's a really helpful daily aggregation of information. CDC.gov certainly provides really good, consistent data about where, where we're at as a country. And I would encourage people right now to use the CDC website to find KN95 masks, particularly if you're going to be going out, because it's a little thing that you can do right now to increase your margin for safety is have the right mask, so that you can go out and you can enjoy certain events and you can enjoy certain things with a higher margin for safety. There's KN95 masks for kids too. I would encourage people to look at that and ask questions, listen to podcasts, like be curious, because there's a lot of information. It's coming quick. Every day is a little bit of an adventure right now. And understand that, I was up at 5 this morning trying to educate people today, and I'm probably going to be up until midnight or 1 in the morning continuing on here today. So it's something that the healthcare workers out there are really working really hard to keep things open, and we want games to be played. So really, really try and, do the right things, test, avoid transmitting, and realize one other thing. If you get COVID, don't feel bad. Okay. It's a respiratory virus. Don't feel guilty. Like this thing, it's going to catch up to people. If you're out and you're doing certain things, your goal should be to reduce transmission. Don't transmit COVID. Identify your symptoms, get tested. If you do that, then you're really benefiting the community. And I think that that's a really important take home message. It's okay to get COVID. It's not okay to transmit it and put others at risk. That's something that we should all take really seriously.
I'll add one other quick recommendation, which is folks, if you're on Twitter, to follow Andy Slavitt and his daily strings of information, his threads on this. He's fantastic, and his podcast is fantastic. He is at A Slavitt, A-S-L-A-V-I-T-T. His phenomenal resource on a daily basis. Robbie, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for all of your work on this and for spending the time helping educate my audience. Really appreciate it. Hope all's well out there with you and the family. Haven't seen the daughter come flying through the office recently.
No,
but
she'll come back to play Doc McStuff and see her soon, or Peppa Pig. So that's always the highlight of my day.
Awesome. Awesome. Happy holidays, my friend. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Howard. Appreciate it.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Robbie Sicca for joining me. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Podcast channel on YouTube. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter @HowardBeck.